Some podcasts have sponsors. Our Plant Stories has a coffee crew. They are people who go to ourplantstories.com and are kind enough to press the Buy Me a Coffee button. No caffeine passes anyone's lips, but every virtual coffee is a donation to keep this podcast going. So that's Buy Me a Coffee by going to the top of the page on ourplantstories.com. Now, on with the episode. Welcome to Our Plant Stories. It's a podcast where we share our plant stories, learning to grow plants along the way. This episode features the silver birch tree, and the story is going to take us to two gardens.
Actually, the moving thing, the thing that's moved me since we've just been here only a little short while, is just seeing people on crutches and people in wheelchairs and, you know, just remembering how tough that is at the time and, you know, how overwhelming it is and how, you know, you might think that's never going to change. And yet the sort of sense of nature being here alongside you has a wonderful quality to it as well. You sort of hope in the background.
This is Judith Kleinman, returning to the Royal National Orthopaedic Hospital in Stanmore for the first time since she was a patient, aged just 19. A musician, this experience left a lasting impression on her life. As part of her recovery, she had lessons in, and later became a teacher for, Alexander Technique, and practiced yoga and Tai Chi, and these skills all come together in a book she has written called Finding Quiet Strength. She says in the introduction that the ideas in the book can help on the journey of finding a quiet, flexible strength, which, as you will hear, is reflected in her plant story, which begins with the silver birches outside Judith's back door.
Well, it's a quite sort of small London garden, and we've got three very big pots, sort of slightly Alibaba-type size pots, with three silver birch trees, which are probably at about half the height that a full-grown tree might get to. And they are very white, with these little speckles of black, and the sort of dappling all the way up the bark, which is rather beautiful, I think. And they just open up. You get a real sense of vertical resting, don't you? A sense of that sort of energy that gravity has to go up but be rooted in safety in the ground. And as you can hear, the birds love them and love to come and sit and be in them.
I'll put some photographs of the trees and that beautiful bark that Judith describes on the website. As a child, Judith had a silver birch tree outside her bedroom window, so growing up, she knew this tree. But its real significance in her life was still to come.
I'm 19 and I had a year at music college. I was very fortunate and got into the Guildhall School of Music, and I was studying double bass mainly there and cello and really having a wonderful time. And at the end of the first year, I went on holiday with some friends to France, and unfortunately we were involved in a big car accident.
It must have been an incredibly traumatic moment, and you're also far from home. Did they bring you back to the UK, was it?
I mean, really, you know, now we're parents, and you know, you think, golly, how did they all deal with that? But they did. There was a hospital plane that flew me back to England and London, and I think it was worrying, but when you're actually in the middle of it, I think I was so driven to get back to music, and almost at any cost, I think. So, you know, I was very fortunate with physiotherapy and all sorts of help, but I think it's hard to take time at that age and know that you need to really rest and progress slowly, because that's really the nature of injuries, isn't it? Having been very active, just being inactive was quite traumatic, actually. And even though in many ways the prognosis was, you know, developed to be much better than we thought it would, but the thought of being in pain for a long time was quite a lot to bear, I expect, at the time. But like many sort of disasters in life, it actually, we turned around into this most incredible thing, because through that accident happening and the injuries that I sustained, I sort of had to look for a practice, really. And that's how sort of looking into well-being and opening my mind to really exploring ways to get through it really has been an incredible thing.
So describe for me the silver birches that you saw when you were in hospital then. Are they in the garden? Are they in the surroundings?
Well, they were then. It would be so interesting to see if they are. There were just one or two that you could see out of the window. And, you know, and obviously I'd had this lovely tree outside my bedroom window. The thing they've always represented for me, not just sort of beauty and elegance and a sort of upward sense of going upwards, not pulling downwards, but being rooted at the same time. I think what they've represented for me is the many different kinds of strengths there are in us, and that we need to call on different strengths at different times. And that sort of flexibility and direction that they've got was such an inspiration from that time, really. What it looked like then, that sort of vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is incredible.
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
Judith and I have come back to the hospital to see Horatio's garden. Horatio Chappell was a young man who was an aspiring doctor. He volunteered at Salisbury Spinal Centre in his school holidays and, through his own observation and conversations with patients, realised that there was a need for a garden. Tragically, aged just 17, he was killed on a science expedition, but his ideas have been realised by the charity Horatio's Garden, with a mission to create gardens in all 11 NHS spinal injury centres in the UK. Ashley Edwards is the head gardener, London and the South East, based in Stanmore.
The charity Horatio's Garden is a national charity, and we build really beautiful functional spaces which are completely accessible at NHS spinal injury centres. We are completely self-funded, and all of the money that we need to build gardens we have to raise ourselves. So we rely on people's generosity and in donating.
Judith, since this programme is about silver birch, maybe just tell me what you're looking at.
Well, it's just so delightful, because there are lots of silver birch trees and they're all different shapes and actually different whites in a way, but they really are magical. And we're sitting here literally watching birds fly in and out of them, and it really is magical. And to see also in this garden, I think, the most tasteful water features I've ever seen in my life. They're just so perfect. And it's all laid out with such thoughtful grace. It's very, very beautiful. So it's a lovely for me to come back and see it like this. I was just saying how the world has changed so much. There's so much thought and kindness has gone into this garden. Wonderful.
Ashley, how long have you been here?
I've been here almost 4 years now. So I started with the garden and was here to help plant it all, coordinate volunteers. And yeah, it's been great. It's been great to grow the community that we have here. And also to see the garden mature and really knit together. So yeah, it's been fantastic. And the trees, the silver birch, have grown a lot actually since they've been put in, which has been really nice. And you can see, you know, the silver birch here, we actually have them set within the resin bound gravel as well. And that means that people can get right up to them. And that was some feedback we'd had from other gardens. People missed being able to touch a tree or be under the shade of a tree. And so this really allows people to get underneath the tree.
Wonderful. Yeah. And as you said earlier, there's one old silver birch that's been here for a long time, which really looks like the wise lady of London. And it's beautiful, isn't it, to see a tree in its maturity and the others sort of aspiring to that. Wonderful.
Yeah, you've put that so beautifully, because it is like this one mature tree looking over the others, and yeah, you get the sense that the others are going to become that one day, and it will look amazing when we have these kind of grove of silver birch. It will completely change the atmosphere of the garden. It will become shadier and cooler as they mature. And yeah, I'm excited to see how that works going forward.
What prompted the choice of silver birch?
I think they have good wildlife value, so they support many different insects, and they're a native tree, so that's one of the big reasons. Also, they look great all year round. In the spring you have the lovely fresh green foliage that appears, then you get catkins, and then in the winter you have, you know, the bright white bark, and sometimes we do wipe them down a bit just to really show it off. And they glow, yeah, they really glow in the winter. They're lovely multi-stemmed trees, so you get the effect of more than one tree in one tree. So that's a really clever planting effect as well. And yeah, the birds adore them. We've got birds flitting in and out of the trees. They're very tactile. They have the kind of bark that you want to go up and touch and rub. So I think that's also another great choice.
It's almost like parchment, isn't it? As though you could sort of peel it off and write a letter or something.
Yeah.
It's so lovely.
When I was a child, I used to do that all the time. I just like peel off all the bark. I don't know if it damages the tree. I don't think it does. But it's just something, yeah, you just can't help yourself. You want to touch the tree. And
you've both had different experiences of how a garden like this works in a setting like this. Judith, you as a patient, and Ashley, you as a gardener, horticulturalist, talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, I think I was saying earlier, I mean, it's hard to separate the mind, body and sort of emotion when something catastrophic happens in your life. You're particularly aware of that. And to find your sort of resilience and restore your resilience, really, and your inner strength, you need resources. You really do. And I think to be just shut up in a room without any connection to nature, or even just sitting here, just the wind and the air, it's just such a different experience of feeling connected to the world rather than that sort of, you know, very hospital atmosphere that we all are familiar with. So I think it's so important to, I mean, literally, I think, give people hope through nature, actually. And it's wonderful to see that's that aspect of people recovering is being more understood now, and that it really is the whole of you that is recovering. You know, your whole life has been derailed, and you're needing to come back to a new future and a new way forwards. And you really, I think we all whether we have accidents or challenges or whatever it is, but we all need the cavalry of help to come and restore us back to hope.
Yeah, that resonates, because I see people's journeys while they're here, and the garden here at Horatio's, it really gives people that hope and that space, that sanctuary to sit outside and contemplate what's happened and really have that space to think, because the ward is a typical hospital environment. It's very overstimulating. You know, you've got buzzers going off, you've got people coming in and out to go through your care routine, and you're constantly kind of being assessed, and that's just the nature of being in a hospital as it is at the moment. And you don't really have privacy either. You've got just a blue curtain separating you from the person in the next bed. So you hear all conversations, and to be able to come out here and especially use the garden pods, which we have on this side of the garden, these kind of wooden buildings which feel really homely actually, and the complete opposite to kind of the clinical environment of the ward. To be able to come out and sit and contemplate, maybe, you know, have that space to cry or talk to your loved ones about the difficult decisions you're going to have to make going forward, and just, yeah, get used to a new life and have that connection with nature as well, which often gives people hope. Seeing like spring bulbs emerge, you know, I mean, that's hopeful for everybody. And I think when you're in a place where you've had a kind of life-changing experience, being able to ground yourself with nature and see the familiarity of nature can be really soothing.
So what did you have in your time here, Judith?
Well, it wasn't anything quite as glorious as the Horatio's garden, which I'd really recommend everyone to see and support, because it's so beautiful. I was in one of these prefab wards, but there was the wood and the trees that we could see out of the window. And I think I really loved what you said there, because I can literally remember every person in that ward and, you know, the noisiness of it and the sort of clatter, bang, wallop that's going on all day. And just to be able to imagine a quietude and tranquility is there. What was really helpful. And then gradually, as you can sort of come outside, just perfect.
What attracted you to the job, Ashley?
It was this combination of working with plants but also working with people, which is my passion. So connecting people with nature is something I'm very passionate about. It's kind of my main goal in life, I think. So being able to connect people with nature in a way which would also benefit their well-being was something very attractive to me, and that's the main reason I went for it, really, because I knew it would have that good balance of gardening and working with people. So yeah, that was, and it's like no other job I've ever had, and I think in general it's a very unique job in the horticultural world. You are head gardener, but you have so many other roles. You know, you're working with people, you're listening to people's stories, you have to be a very empathetic person, and you're also managing volunteers, and we have lots of events here as well, so you're kind of planning events and making sure that the garden's looking good at all times of year. So I like the diversity of the job. No one day is the same. Every few months I meet a whole new block of people, so you get to meet people from all walks of life, and I love hearing people's stories. And I love hearing the impact that the garden has on people, and I'm always getting, you know, lovely feedback and beautiful words that really move me sometimes to hear what it's meant for people. So, yeah, in overall, it's a really fulfilling job that I enjoy.
Because in a funny sort of way, I mean, we're talking about the impact of the garden on people in a sort of conscious way, but there's a sort of subconscious, what would nature say, conversation going on, isn't there? Sort of like, keep going.
Yeah.
Because that's really, that's the big message, I think, of a garden. Because you never know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, you're right. I personally, I feel very connected to nature all my life, and I think it's helped me through, you know, times where I've had maybe mental struggles and things like that. And so I personally know the impact that it can have. And so to be able to bring that to people is, yeah, something that I really cherish. And, you know, I feel very privileged to be able to do that. Mm. And yeah, talking about nature, you know, we all seek connection. And I think in a time where you've gone through a life-changing injury, you can feel quite disconnected, not only from, you know, the outside world, but your own body, you know, your family and friends. And maybe we can all find some connection in nature. And I think to have this space, which is, you know, nature doesn't judge you. You can be out in a space. It doesn't impose anything on you, and you can reflect. It can reflect back what you're feeling. It can help you process things. I'm a big believer in that.
That's so true. Yeah, because sometimes it's rainy and you just have to weather the storms, don't you? Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. I think also there's something about, you know, the imagination, I think, that comes into it all. And lovely seeing all the creative work that's going on here. I mean, I literally think we might have stuck some macaroni on a piece of paper. Seeing all the beautiful things that are happening now, poetry and music and making things, it's really wonderful to see how that's developed, that understanding of people recovery.
And growing as well, you know, growing seeds. Oh. You know, I had a gentleman last week, and he's, I don't know, he was probably in his mid-50s or so, but he's never sown a seed before,
oh,
you know, and just to be able to show people new skills, because a lot of the time, once you've had an injury, it's kind of about what you can't do anymore, and I think it's nice to be able to show people they can do things, they can do new things, they can learn new skills.
Lovely.
That they can take home with them, and yeah, I just checked in the greenhouse today and they're germinating, so that's good. I'm going to show him later.
That's brilliant. Yeah, and that is really hopeful, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think what you said earlier about silver birches as a tree, just coming back to them because they're so present in the garden, that they do grow quite quickly. Mm. You know, I mean, if you're growing an oak tree, you're going to have to be jolly patient. But they really do go for it. And it's just so lovely.
We always end with a how to grow. And I really hope some of you may consider this tree.
Well, you could grow a silver birch in a pot. You could have a bonsai silver birch if you wanted to. But yeah, you could grow a silver birch in a pot. It's obviously going to be smaller than it would be if you were planting it in the ground, and you would need to supply it with everything it needs. So you just have to be, you know, hot on watering and making sure it gets kind of like a yearly soil top up, so that it's getting the nutrients it needs. So it will grow in a pot. And if you have a very large pot, they can do really well. And, you know, you can still have multi-stem specimens in pots if they're big enough. So, yeah, the bigger the better, I would say, pot-wise.
Obviously, bear in mind, I've done a programme recently about the monkey puzzle tree, which you just, you need about, you know, an enormous garden or a very big field, basically, as far as I can see. How much space do I need for a silver birch tree?
Well, the good thing about silver birch is you don't have to have a huge space. You can, if you get a multi-stemmed variety, you can actually fit it into a smaller space, and because it is multi-stemmed, it will kind of stay quite compact, and it gives the effect that you have more than one tree, which is nice. So it is suitable for a medium size garden, I would say. And with a multi-stemmed tree as well, you don't really need to prune them. They have this lovely shape. So we've got the Betula jackmontii here, and they have these really nice kind of diamond shape as they grow. You have a kind of wider in the middle, pointy crown, and like you can crown lift them. So what we do here is I slowly prune the lower branches so that you have more stem revealed, and kind of helps as well. If you've got underplanting, it gives more light to the stuff you've got underneath.
And in terms of light aspect?
They grow in most aspects. They're not fussy. And if you go to your local park or woodlands, you'll see silver birch growing in all sorts of conditions. So they might grow like right next to a conifer, or they might grow in an open space. But they generally grow amongst other woodland trees, and they like to have that kind of protection from open elements. You don't normally find silver birch out in a field on its own. You get them growing amongst other trees. They're often called a pioneer tree because they, they grow kind of one of the first trees to kind of germinate in open spaces would be a silver birch, and they often grow quite quickly and fill that space. But they compared to some trees like an oak, they don't actually live a long life. They might live like 150 years would be a really old silver birch.
I kind of love that about them. And I love that they like to co-regulate with other trees in that way and find their strengths together.
Yeah.
How beautiful is that?
My thanks to Judith and to Ashley. You can find details of Judith's book, Finding Quiet Strength, and links to Horatio's garden on the website ourplantstories.com. If you've enjoyed the episode, please do think about rating or reviewing it on your podcast app, because the way algorithms work, and please don't ask me for details, is that by doing it, you will help others to discover Our Plant Stories. It's presented and produced by me, Sally Flatman. Thank you if you have become part of the coffee crew today. I really appreciate your donation, and I promise you it will not be spent on plants or coffee, but on this podcast.